Okay, Erev Tov, to a summary of the various halachot and opinions with regard to traveling Erev Shabbos or on Shabbos. So we'll just look at page 33 in the Tzurba Sefer, and you'll see there an interesting summary of what we've discussed over the last couple of weeks. So there were a number of reasons which motivated us to consider travel Erev Shabbos such that there's enough time, for Shabbos. We all good. And the reasons were as follows. Number one, there was an there's an issue of travel impacting one's Onek Shabbos. Specifically in the days of old, you would feel it much more than you do it today, but still anybody's going to get seasick. Plane sick, train sick, whatever motion sickness you might get will affect your Onek Shabbos. And so therefore, one has to make sure that one is used to the nature of travel already by Shabbat. And the way to do that is to get on the on the actual mode of transport a number of days before Shabbos. So that was specifically talking about a boat. But it could get, it could in theory, if you were on a plane or a train that was causing you motion sickness, it would be a problem as well. So that particular reason is the main reason that the Rif brings down. You see there the second column. The Rif thinks it's an Onek Shabbos is the major reason why setting sail on Shabbos is a problem. The Balamaor writes that there would be quite a high level of chance in those days that you'd get into trouble on the boat, and as a result of that, you would violate Shabbos either to survive or to look after yourself. And so there's a potential Chilul Shabbos in front of you. And the third major reason that we looked at was the last column where you'd have non-Jews performing melacha for you on Shabbos, which is a problem. So there's a rabbinic decree against benefiting from melacha that a non-Jew does for you on Shabbos, specifically when that melacha is done for you and you benefit from it, as opposed to the non-Jew doing it for himself and you are a side beneficiary. But if he does it for you, then you are benefiting from melacha that a non-Jew does for you, and the gzeira is that it's just a quick step where you would do the melacha for yourself. So those were the three major reasons that we came across first in our discussion. We then went on to the fourth column, which was an understanding of the Ramban's approach, and that is that the word Shabbaton, which is used in conjunction with describing the environment that's supposed to permeate Shabbos, the Ramban has a chiddush where he says that the idea of creating an environment which is a restful environment, more than just not doing melacha, he sees an added kiyum, an added fulfillment of the concept of rest on Shabbos, that there's a whole dimension that has to be felt and present on Shabbos. And that is, even if you might not be violating actual official melachot, but if the environment is such that you can't really rest, then that is not a kiyum, that is not a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Shabbaton. And so the Chasam Sofer then takes this particular reason and he staples it to what the problems could be or why there was such sensitivity around travel on Shabbos. Because even if you could come along and say, okay, I'm not going to be in violation of any of the others, but the fact travel in general is not an environment which is in fulfillment of Shabbaton, that restful mode. And so it would be something like saying that, can you maybe walk for miles upon miles upon miles on Shabbos, even if you weren't violating any of the issues? You would have to take this into account. Maybe that kind of level of walk is not a Shabbaton type environment. And then you'd have to say, well, am I allowed to do that or should I do that? So it's always this concept of Shabbaton is more than just the malachas, or maybe you'll violate them, but it's more like an actual requirement that it's kind of a peaceful, restful environment. It could quite well be. It could quite be, well be. Now, there'll be, even objectively, you'll have quite a wide application. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it could be, you know. So you have to take that into account. And the last idea we bumped into was Rabbeinu Hananel's concept, where traveling on Shabbos can compromise the Gzeira Drabanan of violating the Tchum Shabbos, where if you are traveling a certain distance, which is not a lot, and you are not watching carefully, and you move 2,000 amot, or let's say a kilometer outside of the boundary of where you started off, and there's no city to join it, you know, then you would be in trouble. So if you're on a train, the chances are between one city and another city, you are going to violate Tchum. You're going to go further than a kilometer outside of the city. On a plane, you know, you're also definitely going to, most probably going to end up doing that, unless you've got a very strange trip planned, you know, where I guess you theoretically it's possible. You can get, you know, you can get on the helicopter at point A and get off at point B after a 5 minute, 10 minute flight, and you may have gone in a circle. You may not have. Yeah, so the Tchum is only really horizontal. The Tchum, if you start off, you know, more than 10 amot high, you're already in a different reshut, and that could be a little easier. However, if you started off on the ground and you went there, you'd end up having to ask that question as whether you violated Tchum or not. But in theory, the concept of Tchum Shabbos plays a big role when you, in modern day scenarios, when you're driving outside of the city. In the city, in theory, if somebody drove you around or rickshawed you around or whatever else it may be, you could argue that you're still in the tchum of the city, and therefore you could probably be okay. And, you know, in the case of a train, for example, there's also this question about I'm more than 10 fachim up from the floor. I'm a meter high. You know, just by getting on the train, therefore it's a separate reshut, and therefore tchum shouldn't really apply. However, if the platform that you're on is more than 2 by 2 meters, dalad al dalad, you're already getting into an issue, even if you're above the 10 fachim limit. So tchum becomes quite an issue.
If you get from the platform onto the train, not if you're on
the train. Once you're on the platform, then traveling on a platform which is already...
You mean the train?
Yeah, the train.
The floor of the train.
Oh, that's a stable enough platform, which is more than 2 by 2 meters. So you're already, yeah, you've counted the leniency of being 10 tfachim high. 10 tfachim high normally would be like a Mekumpetur kind of area. So the Tchum Shabbos, we discussed that would kick in quite, that would kick in, the application of it would be quite relevant if you were on a cruise ship and you wanted to get off at the port, and you thought, okay, I'm going to get off on that at that port, and then I've got to work out how far into the city can I go. You have to work out, you know, how much population is in that 1 kilometer area where you just get off, or the port in itself is quite a big area, and then you're walking outside of the port into the next domain, and that could be a lot bigger than the Tchum, so you can't go anywhere just to the port and back. You know what I mean? So you'd have to work it out if you were on a cruise ship. Sometimes the cruise ship literally comes right up to the, you know, where the harbor or the landing is, such that the nature of the city is that it begins almost right at the port. You know, you literally jump off the, you know, you walk off the gangplank, you know, onto the harbor, and you're right there. You know, you're right there. There's a city there, whatever it is. You know, so, you know, I would say that the clearest example that I've seen of this is in Rhodes, where the ships come right up to the city and mamish, like they get off the boats, you know, meters away from the boats, you know, landing spot is already the old city of Rhodes. It's mamish like you're almost on the water, you know, so... Again, there you'd have an easier time because the tchum would be from there, you know, on. But yeah, anyway, the tchum is an issue that you have to worry about if you're going to get off the boat. So these are five reasons that make travel on Shabbos or before Shabbos something to consider. You know, having enough warning, enough experience to get used to it, in order that you don't violate aspects of Shabbos. So in modern day times, people could make a strong case that getting on a major cruise ship is not going to be that compromising of Onik Shabbos, because most people don't feel the motion and get sick from it. Others, if you've given them 3 days, then they already get used to it. I don't know. Some of us don't even want to try. But if you...
about leisure as opposed to like needing to go somewhere for whatever reason, like really needing to, it's all about leisure. Then isn't this the whole calculation about sort of just getting around halacha, like seeing how much I can let it not interfere with my life?
Well, if the truth is that this gezeira of making sure that it doesn't impact your onik Shabbos is only when you're traveling for leisure. If you're traveling for a mitzvah, we're lenient completely. We assume that, okay, there's kind of a price to pay for a mitzvah. And, you know, the level that the price you pay is not severe enough to cancel the mitzvah. So, yeah.
It's very icky.
Look, most people tell you that there's nothing nicer than a cruise. So it could be an oneg Shabbos kiyum. If it really works for you, you know, yeah, exactly. And again, if there are the vast majority of the people on board and the crew are all not Jewish, they're not going to be, you know, not necessarily going to be performing most of the malachot for you. And those that are going to attend to your needs, you'd have to, you could weigh up. It's their job, but at the same time, I shouldn't get them to do a direct malacha for you. So you've got to play a little bit with it, you know, presenting meals and cooking for you, that you've got to make sure that's done before Shabbos, you know.
Sounds like a bochim cook. I don't see how that would affect your onek, but I suppose.
No, that's not an onek thing. That's getting benefit from a melacha that a non-Jew does.
No, that's what I'm saying. But even to have to worry about all that and set it all up and make sure.
No, people tell us that the cruisers are really well set up. In other words, a lot of them know, they've bumped into Orthodox people before, so they already know, and they can assign a certain person that's mamash your go-to person, and they just sort out all the issues from kashrus to Shabbos, etc. They sort of, some of them are quite familiar, but I mean, even there's, you know, like, I don't know if how. But even on Pesach, you hear a lot of people going away on cruises over Pesach. I get all the shiners of it. But, it's there. Chanukah time, you have lots of people going. You know, anyway, I don't know, unless you've been, I haven't been, so I can't tell you. But everyone tells you that it's a wonderful, relaxing experience. And they're minyonim there sometimes. And, you know.
Somebody told us it's like being on a float in Orison.
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think so.
It was a whole kosher cruise.
Yeah, well, a lot of these. Even when they go on a kosher cruise, it's not normally just it's not only kosher people.
Yeah.
It's just that there's a big chunk of you with everything organized, you know, with the own chef, whatever. But,
can't get all.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the chart on page 33 that does a really good job at summarizing the issues for us with regard to travel. Okay, now we mentioned that the big heading of the halachas that we're discussing now are the preparation that needs to be done for Shabbos, and under that umbrella, this discussion with regard to travel was part of that. Now, we get more specifically focused here with regard to food preparation on Shabbos. So, the Gemara has a relates a discussion, and so do the Midrash Halakha also relates this discussion, telling us that one has to always keep in mind the items that you need for Shabbos, the food items that you need for Shabbos. And the pasuk that introduces us to the concept of keeping Shabbos in mind is Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadosho. Zachor meaning remember Shabbos. So if we translate the word Zachor as to remember, so what does that exactly mean? So Rabbi Elazar ben Hananya, ben Chizkiya ben Hananya, ben Agaron, is quoted here in note 15 from the Mechilta, interpreting that Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadosho means Tahei Zochro Me'echad B'Shabbos. You should already start thinking about Shabbos from the Sunday before, such that if you come across something delicious, then save it for Shabbos. And that would be one way of always remembering, you know, to have something for Shabbos. Rabbi Yitzchak says, Lo tahei moneh kederech she'acherim monin. Rabbi Yitzchak says that the way we count our days in the week should be such that they are related to Shabbos. Ela tahei moneh l'shem Shabbat. And that's what we fulfill when we do the Shir Shul Yom, as we mentioned in the name of the Ramban. Hayom Yom Rishon, you know, b'Shabbat or l'Shabbat is a way of counting, you know, always having Shabbos in mind. Now, the Gemara, it's a famous Gemara, Masechet Beitza. The Gemara comes along and tells us, Beitza Tetzayin Amud Aleph, about Hillel and Shammai, how they applied this particular principle. So the Gemara's writer says as follows, Tanya, Amru alav Shammai azaka, ein kol yamav haya ochel lichvot Shabbat. Shammai always had in mind about eating such that the kabod of Shabbos would be highlighted. How would he do that? Matzah beimanae, if he found a good animal, Omer Zulu Shabbat. This is an animal that's going to be kept for Shabbos. As the week rolled on, Matzah Acheret Na'ehe Mena, he found a better cow, cut of meat. Meniach Ashniya, he would then put aside the better one, Bocheret HaRishona, and he would eat the first one that he had for meals during the week. So he'd always keep on saying to himself, okay, the nicest has to be saved for Shabbos. Aval Hillel Azakein midacheret haitalo. Hillel approached this differently. Shekol ma'asav l'shem shamayim, such that everything that he did was always l'shem shamayim. Shenemar Baruch Hashem yom yom. So he would quote this verse, Baruch Hashem yom yom. You would praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu day by day, and that would mean that whatever you do on that day has to be l'shem shamayim. So if you found something delicious, you would eat it because you found it on that day, and you know, day by day, Baruch Hashem yom yom. And if Hashem, you know, blessed you that you'd find something good on day one, then why wouldn't he give you something better on day two? You should live with that level of emunah, you know, all the time. Tanya Namihachi, a writer, was presented in summary of this, by Shammai Omrim, Me'echad Shabbach L'Shabtach, that from the very first moment during the week, from Sunday, you should always keep in mind Shabbos. U'Beit Hillel Omrim, Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. So that's how we summarize the two different approaches of, you know, of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Now, normally the rule of thumb is that we paskin like Beit Hillel, so that a person finds something delicious during the week, off you go, and you'll have emunah that Hashem will provide you something better by the time Shabbos comes along. However, what's interesting is that living like that depends on your level of emunah. It really depends on a high level. If you're not somebody who thinks and lives on that level, you're going to run into trouble because you'll end up eating what you want, and then you don't have anything good left for Shabbos because you might not be among those choice people that Hashem would bless with that level of, you know, of delicacy. And so this concept is spoken about by the Poskim. So in the Mishnah Brura, you find the following point. V'iskimu arbei Poskim, note 17. Many Poskim have concluded, Shagam Hillel Moide, that even Hillel would agree, Shekadivrei Beit Shammai Adifa Tfei, that in our generation, Beit Shammai's opinion actually would be the preferable one to follow. Elak Sheaya Botach Bashem, Shebavada Yasmin Lola Shabbat Manayafa, Mishara Yamim. Unless you're somebody who, like Beit Hillel himself, he always had that level of faith that Hashem would take care of him and give him something even better. Ukdei lechazek midat bitchono, and to strengthen his midah of faith, hayano hei kain. He would apply it like this. Aval bishar kol adam, but for regular individuals, sha'ein bitchono chazak kol kach, gam hu modeh, even Beit Hillel would agree, k'shamai adifa, a person should act like Shammai, and save what you have until you get something better. Upsita b'davar she'eino shchiach l'knot. Tfei means more. So Beit Shammai's approach is more beneficial. Upsita b'davar she'eino shchiach l'knot, and it's obvious that if you can't get something, k'sheyizdamein lo davar shelo yeh nifsad, if you come across something that will not spoil, azai yaniach oto l'shabbat, then you should leave it for Shabbos. So the question is, of course, nowadays, how relevant is this? You know, so Well, if you're living in a decent sized Jewish community, it's not very relevant. You're not gonna miss out on some choice piece of food that's in the makolet on Sunday. You know, and by the next Friday, you're not going to get it.
No, but if Vanya makes me a babka,
yeah,
that's so delicious, and she brings it over on Monday. If I don't put it in the freezer, then there on Monday, there's no way I'm saving it for Shabbat. I'm just saying four examples, because it's so delicious, but I'm not guaranteed to get another one before Shabbat. So I have to save it for Shabbat.
For me, and she'll only
bring it to you on Friday.
5 minutes before Shabbat.
When it's fresh. That's the hour thing.
Yeah, the thing is, if you don't have the freezer, it would spoil, then you'd have to eat it.
If you could say the meat situation,
there will be no
reaction. When you don't know when the meat
is going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct. Easter or whatever, you're going to.
Yeah, so exactly right. If you can say, listen, you know, the meat situation is dire and you won't get that scotch fillet, you know, then you've got to keep it for Shabbos. So this is really what the poskim discuss nowadays. You know, it depends very much where you live and what the nature of the community is. So Taka, if you see something good and you know it's not going to spoil, then get it and keep it for Shabbos.
We have freezers, so you can do that. And we don't have load shedding.
Correct. But also I would even argue that babka, if you froze it,
It won't taste as good.
It's considered by me spoilt already. So, you know. So you got to, you know.
Yeah.
But if it's fish.
Yeah, so yeah.
Freeze it, you wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah.
So we don't see him tell.
You can't freeze color.
It's interesting because they would never have a problem freezing something.
Yeah.
Correct. So this would be really applicable then.
Mm. You said you're bad. You have to eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Correct.
Yeah. So unless for in New York, and then what you do is you put the food outside the window of the hotel, and it pretty much freezes.
Yeah.
Those
hotels. Or your apartment. That's what your father and I did, and honey, who just we bought stuff.
And just hung it out the window.
Oh, they had to collect the lunch for the next day, and there was no room in the fridge, so they left it in the car overnight.
Yeah, that works. All right, so you see here the quote in the note here, at the bottom of page 17, in the highlighted orange, it should be noted that the need to set aside one's more choice purchase early in the week for Shabbat is not as relevant nowadays as it once was, due to an abundance of food and other items available in stores and supermarkets. Since one can likely find the same delicacies in the stores on Thursday or Friday, one need not set aside those foods earlier in the week, as described by Rav Eliezer Melamed in the Pnei Halakha.
On the contrary, you have to find better stuff.
What's bring the in definition of set aside, though?
Is it just to marinate?
Does it mean buy it? Or not eat it when you've already bought it?
Well, look, he says this, the last line, he says, nevertheless, according to this halakha, even today, a person is required to honor Shabbat by planning ahead for Shabbat and by purchasing especially fine foods for it. So I would say that if there isn't this issue of running out of stuff, then you would do it this way. You'd say, okay, I know what I can get, and I should save the nicest for Shabbos. He does even the footnote over here, like what you are saying, this rule may still be relevant in cases where one travels only once a week to a store that carries specific delicacies. Alternatively, it may be applicable if one knows that a certain preferred product is likely to be out of stock in one's regular supermarket by the end of the week. So, bottom line is, you got to keep that in mind, that the choices of meats or foods or delicacies, whatever, should be set aside for Shabbos.
Halakha that actually obligates you.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I wanna just quickly show you. Maybe I'll just.
That's amazing.
No, it's the only one you're looking at.
What?
Yeah, always drop it off on Friday.
You send my university a letter saying that I need to take 2 weeks off. I will make everyone a vodka.
2 weeks.
Just don't for it.
I just need the headspace.
Or a Shabbaton.
Okay, so I've just sent you. I think I sent it to the right group. Okay, so I sent you now a look at your phone. It's dead.
She didn't bring hers.
Oh, really?
The one
are you on the group?
No.
I'll send it to you.
The
we should add it to the group, though.
Thanks,
that's so thoughtful of you.
Why are you not on the group?
Because my
mom's
on the group, and she's my friend.
Okay, so this was an idea which a number of years ago I had. In fact, it was during COVID. We were davening in the park, and we were davening in the park, and so we had this lovely break of a good couple of hours between the end of Musaf and the start of Mincha and Ne'ilah. And so I came home, and the daf yomi of that particular day was this daf in Beitza, Tetvav, and then Tetzayin, depending where you were holding. But it was this particular daf. So it discussed this issue of Hillel and Shammai and, the best for Shabbos or Baruch Hashem Yom Yom, etc. Anyway, so I was busy looking into the the daf as I was doing it, and I looked up a number of interesting points I found. One point was that it's interesting, how far does one have to go in order to purchase something good for Shabbos?
Hmm.
So it's what surprised me was that the Shulchan Aruch Harav, so the Baal HaTanya Shulchan Aruch, wrote there, when I looked it up, that a person even needs to be willing to go into debt for Shabbos. So you got to buy something that's really, that's to what level. And I was like quite intrigued by that, because we have a general halacha that a mitzvah is not allowed to cost you more than 20% of your bank account. So if a person has, let's say, for argument's sake, if you're considering buying a pair of tefillin, for yourself, for your kid, whatever it is, and a pair of tefillin, let's call it a basic kosher pair of tefillin, would cost you, let's say, $500, Aussie dollars. That would be like a basic pair of tefillin. So you would only be liable, in other words, you only have an obligation to buy that pair of tefillin, you know, if $500 was less than 20% of what you had in your bank account. But if the $500 was going to be more than 20% of what you had, you know, then you would be completely exempt from spending that money on the tefillin, and you'd be patur from the mitzvah of tefillin. Because all mitzvot are says, you know, we have a principle. You know, hamavazbeh is a person who invests money in a positive mitzvah. Al yavazbeh is yoter michomesh, should not give more than a fifth. You shouldn't spend more than a fifth on what you have. If you have the money, then hidur mitzvah at shlish. Then you have the base mitzvah of $500, let's say, and you got the money, it's not an issue. So there's another mitzvah to be mahader in the tefillin and add on, you know, a third, you know, to the amount of money that you'd invest in the mitzvah. And if you wanted to do a mitzvah min hamuvchar, you know, whatever you were able to achieve. So, you know what I mean? There's a kind of a hierarchy of how much you'd invest in a mitzvah. But there's this principle that the mitzvah shouldn't cost you more than 20% of what you have. So when I was learning this, this is what sort of was bothering me. You know, how do you go into debt? So this is exactly right. In other words, if you cannot afford it, then you may not be obligated to do it. You'd have to then go and say to yourself, okay, what do I do? Do I say that it's equal to a lot, I say, because not sending them is going to, you know, send them, is going to be teaching them nonsense. You've got to have all these calculations of how to do it. So they're not going to become good Jews. And you have to, it's a complicated question of how to work out school fees. And if can you count school fees as tzedakah? Because, you know, tzedakah is only something, or maaser is only something that you you don't benefit from. So when you're paying school fees, you're actually benefiting. So if you're benefiting from it, you can't actually take it off your tzedakah because you're actually benefiting from it. So school fees is a real noose around your neck. But you could start to argue as well that, well, look, I can send, if I really want, I can send my kid to a public school, pay, I don't know, what do you pay public school? $500 a year. And then I can go and spend whatever I want on private tutors to make, and it still won't come near the 40,000 that you have to spend.
Isn't there also a difference in school fees between the money that's being paid for the Kodesh and the money that's being paid for that?
Yes and no, because you've got an obligation to teach your child such that they can get a trade or they can be educated. So there's kind of like a certain amount of education. There's also a question about how the school fees are structured. So in our case, those of us who are paying full school fees are actually subsidizing a whole bunch of other people. So it's not really the cost of education that you're paying. You're paying, you know, it's kind of around it. Yeah, you're doing that. So those who are blessed to pay full school fees are actually being pushed to actually subsidize the rest of us who can't. So it's that kind of cheshbon as well. So if you're one of those people who are paying full school fees, you could probably do a calculation and say, well, what it really costs is X, and I'm paying X squared or 2X, and therefore, you know, the extra I can take off my tzedakah. But putting that all aside, the mitzvah is not to give more than 20%, not to invest more than 20% in a mitzvah. And this is compromised if you're going to go into debt. So that was my question on how to understand, you know, what the Shulchan Aruch HaRav was driving at here. And what I started to understand or suggest was that if a person lives on the level of Beit Hillel, that you're convinced, you know, with every fiber of your being that Hashem will give you the food that you need for Shabbos, then there's no problem because you're not going into debt. You've got to be prepared to, but in the end, and maybe that's a way to interpret and explain it. But other than that, I would say that you have, you know, the other poskim, I didn't see any other poskim saying you should go that far. But nevertheless, you're going to invest in good food, delicacies, whatever else it is. So when I was reading this over, so I started to see this Mishnah, I saw this Mishnah Berurah that really today it's only Beit Hillel top people that should follow his dictate of Baruch Hashem Yom Yom. But the rest of us should do like Beit Shammai and whatever is, right? So I then thought about this particular problem. And that is if you know, how do we understand the following? So what I sent you on the WhatsApp was a photo of a Zmirah that's in most of the decent Zmirot books on Shabbos morning. And most of us don't say it because there isn't an official tune for it. But I stapled a tune to it. So we sing it.
We do.
So having married the tune, I was quite familiar with the words because it's kind of one of those Zmirot that you remember. So yeah, the whole idea behind the whole Zmirah is, you know, this concept that Hashem will provide for Shabbos. So the Zmirah starts off, Chai Hashem uBaruch Tzuri, Vashem Titarel Nafshi, etc. Now, when you go in this particular siddur, you go 3-6 lines down from the
when
top.
Did you sing it?
Shachris.
When?
Lunchtime.
By Kiddush.
After Kiddush.
Here it seems to be
part. Yeah, it's part of a. People say before Kiddush. No, we do it in the middle of the meal.
Okay.
Yeah. I think people would get lynched if I started expanding the already expanded Kiddush. Yeah. So, I'd have no one left, you know. So, yeah, so six lines down from the top. So it says, Tama nafshi el Hashem, you know, my soul thirsts for Hashem. Yimalei sova asamai. Yimalei sova asamai. Hashem should fulfill my requests of what I have to eat. You know, like, you know, Osem is like the bounty of food that I need, you know. Yeah, that's awesome, yeah. So, it's actually in the Gemara. It's part of the, you find that as part of the Nusach said by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. So when he's davening for, when you're doing the Avodah, you're familiar with the Avodah on Yom Kippur? That's the part that normally takes us all out, right? So at the end of the Avodah, when the Kohen Gadol is davening there and gets the Brocha, so he says he wants a year full of bounty and plenty, and they're all different synonyms or words that represent, you know, and one of them is awesome. Yeah. So again, my soul thirsts to serve Hashem or for Hashem. Hashem should provide me all the bounty that I need. Where do I get it from? El He Harim Esa Inai. I'll lift up my eyes to, you know, to the mountains, in other words, to Hashem. Kehilal Velo Keshamai. You see that? So there's Kehilal Ukeshamai. That's one version. And then it says in brackets, V'yesh Gorsin. V'yesh Gorsin, there are those who have the text. A Girsa is a text. You know, V'yesh Gorsin, there are those who have the text. Velo Keshamai. Now, most people have Velo Keshamai.
Right.
Most people have Velo Keshamai, right? Because that's how we normally, whenever there's a machloket, now what's it talking about? This line is based on this Gemara in Beitza. Now, does a person find something for Shabbos, something beautiful, Hashem provides you something for it, you know? So what do? Do you eat it, you know, and then have faith that Hashem provide you with something better for Shabbos? Well, that's Hillel's opinion. And we normally paskin like Hillel. So that's why the Zmira says, Ki Hillel v'lo k'shamai.
You know? It should be paskin.
And that's what in your Zmirot books, you'll find that. Ki Hillel v'lo k'shamai. I have the Siddur, which I like. This is a Vilna Siddur. You know, it's got all the emendations of the Gaon. So I enjoy working with it. And, you know, light went off in my head saying, hey, one second, there's another Girsa. You know, and it says, Ki Hillel v'k'shamai. How can it be both? How can it be both? Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then I remembered. And then I saw this Mishnah Berurah. When I saw the Mishnah Berurah, I thought, that's why. Because really, everybody should be on the level of Hillel with their faith. And if they're on the level of Hillel, then they'll always get the right food, even better than what they found on Sunday for Shabbos. And that's Ki Hillel v'lo k'shamai. But unfortunately, none of us are on the same madriga as Hillel. And if we aren't on the same madriga as Hillel, even Hillel would admit that it's better for the average person to follow Shammai.
Then why does it say Hillel u'k'shamai?
Because both are true. For the guy with a lot of faith, it's Ki Hillel. And for the person that's the average Joe, it's k'shamai. So then the Zmira would say, that's why they changed the girsa.
But then for the average Joe, shouldn't it be k'shamai, the Lord k'hillel?
No, because it depends on you. So in other words,
but the average Joe.
Yeah, so if you're living in the old days, you know, when you were living with a lot of Hillels, so it's k'hillel v'lo k'shamai. And that's the theory, because you always follow Hillel as opposed to Shammai, unless explicitly the other way around. But in our generation, you got both. You got really good tzaddikim, and you got the average. So both are true. For the tzaddikim in our generation, it's k'hillel. And for the average person, it's k'shamai. So it's k'hillel v'shamai.
It's
Because I took a beta.
Yeah, that one. Because I took a beta. It's also like seems to be the wrong way around. That like you would bench. You're supposed to bench on a because I.
On a kabeta.
Which way does it go?
On a kabeta, because that's bigger.
Yeah.
So the beta satisfies you more, right?
Yeah.
And we machmir to bench on a kazayit.
Yeah. But it's like the similar type of language. Like it's
yeah.
It's the same idea. Like the kazayit will satisfy you. Is it enough as a kibbutza if you have enough?
Emuna.
Then the actual smaller amount will satisfy
you. Right. Correct.
What's
the tune? Yes.
Oh. I'm not going to sing it now to you.
Will you send us a recording?
It's like getting babka on Wednesday. Shabbos mirror tune on Sunday. On Monday. Anyway, it's a... Yeah, I can sing the tune for you if you want, but it's a great tune.
That's it.
It's
a great tune. I the recording.
Yeah.
No, I want to record it.
You want to record it?
There's a separate recording.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do that. If anybody wants the, you know, I'll put it on the WhatsApp group, whatever.
Yeah,
you can be back
here. Okay, so you know, I just enjoyed that exercise of trying to work it out.
Mm.
You know, of the gifts of the different texts over here. So I'm sure you do the same thing with your stuff. All right, so that's okay, so that is more or less the issue with food, that there is an inyan of zachor at Yom HaShabbat, l'kadosho, by focusing on what you can do to make Shabbos that much nicer. So all the nash that you should only allow yourself should be on Shabbos, and the challah should be as good as it can be for Shabbos, and the meat should be as good as it can be for Shabbos. And, you know, that... So yeah, it is tough to actually get the cooking right for Shabbos, because the nature of the hot plates, etc., really murder the food, right? So it is quite tough, especially if you like things rare. But anyway,
yeah.
So, yeah.
A funny story. So when Shira looked like she was going into labor, we found out on Friday afternoon, quite late. So I'm like thinking, if we go to hospital, what do we take? Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, long story short, I landed up in hospital for Shabbos because the baby was born Friday night, quite early. So we were in the hospital for Shabbos and challah, grape juice and lollies.
Perfect. So what more?
Yeah.
Get everything you need.
We've already done that. And yeah. That would have topped
it. Exactly.
For me, it would have been chips. And
all right, so we'll just we'll call it a night over here, and then we'll move on to
well, it was
also something which is probably, I guess, relevant to their times, which is laundry Erev Shabbos.
Which is what?
Laundry, doing laundry.
Laundry.
Yeah. No, I'm saying that's why you would do it earlier than Erev Shabbos. So that's another issue to make sure that you have clean clothes for Shabbos.
It was you, right?
It was me. Yeah, so that was the, you might know of this takana, this decree that was made by Ezra, or fortified by Ezra, to actually only do washing on Thursday. Do washing on Thursday so you don't get stuck for Shabbos.
Thank you. Oops.
Yeah. So, you know, you basically we'll get to that exactly whether this Gzaira still applies, and we'll discuss that issue.
Thank you. I do agree
with that. With a washing machine, it might not be. All right, let me just stop the recording. Cheers to all.
You could still wash on Thursday.
Yeah, that's how I try and get it done on Thursday.